In Dodge County, Wisconsin, in the 1890s, no one expected the tall, lean son of the widow Teresa Joss to be a star athlete, or that he would ever see the inside of the Baseball Hall of Fame. During his abbreviated career, Cleveland pitcher Addie Joss did that and so much more. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Dead Ball. Future Hall of Famer Adrian Addie Joss was born April 12, 1880, in Dodge County, Wisconsin, in the little community of Woodland, about 10 miles from the county seat in Juneau. His parents were Jacob, an immigrant cheesemaker from Switzerland, and Teresa, who was from the area. His father died when Addie was 10 years old. This left Teresa to raise the boy by herself. She opened a sewing shop in Juneau. This allowed her to provide for herself and Addie. Her son was long-limbed and growing up to be a very tall boy. When Addie reached high school, he joined the Juneau High School baseball team and played second base. He completed his education in 1896 and took work at a nearby school. The summer after graduation, Addie started playing for the town's baseball team, and he shifted from second base to pitcher. He was about 18 years old when he adopted the distinctive pitching style that earned him the nickname, the Human Hairpin. In 1899, Addie was pitching for teams in Oshkosh and Manitowoc, Wisconsin. The work was a bit of a struggle because the teams were not well managed. Players didn't always receive their $10 a week salary. So it was a relief when, at the end of 1899, the 19-year-old pitcher was offered a pro baseball contract with the Toledo Mudhens of the Intrastate League. It was on April 28, 1900, that Joss made his major league debut, just 2 weeks after his 20th birthday. He went on to lead the Mudhens to a 16-8 victory. The 6'3", 180-pound pitcher was a sight to behold with his distinctive pitching style. You see, as he pitched, he turned his body toward second base and kicked his leg in the air as he twisted and delivered the ball toward home plate. The completed motion left him standing upright, capable of fielding if necessary. And his delivery made it challenging for batters to pick up the ball from his hand on the way to the plate. In 1901, Joss was still playing for Toledo when scouts from Brooklyn expressed an interest in acquiring him. And Toledo, well, they wanted to hold on to their young pitcher, so they offered Addie a generous salary, enough to make him stay in Ohio, rather than jumping to the New York team. 1902 was a big year for Addie Joss. He married Lillian Sherman, a young lady he reportedly met during his first year playing ball in Toledo. They tied the knot in Monroe, Michigan, and later the couple welcomed their first child, a son, Norman. Norman would be joined by little sister Ruth in 1906. 1902 was a big deal for Joss on the professional front as well. He made his major league debut with the Cleveland Bluebirds, a team later known as the Cleveland Naps and the Cleveland Broncos. On April 26th, 1902, in a game against the St. Louis Browns, Joss had a no-hitter going as the game entered the sixth inning. He allowed a fly ball into right field. Now, the ball was ostensibly caught by outfielder Zaza Harvey, who made a diving catch. However, the home plate umpire ruled this a base hit, which sparked vigorous protests from the Cleveland bench. Despite complaints from the manager, the call stands, and Joss finished the day with his first one-hitter. Cleveland's Joe Birmingham was responsible for the team's only run in that 1-0 victory over St. Louis. And I can't continue without saying something about Zaza Harvey. Great name, right? Zaza was born Irvin King Harvey, and he played only 3 seasons in the majors. He suffered with ongoing stomach issues and would retire from baseball at age 23. The last press mention of Zaza that I could find was a 1962 piece in the Akron Beacon Journal, where he is mentioned as costing Joss his no-hitter on that spring day in 1902. 1902 was Joss's rookie season in the majors. He won 17 games and led the league with 5 shutouts. He finished the season with a 2.77 ERA. His rookie season was so remarkable that an invitation was extended for Joss to join the All-Americans, a team of the best American League players, and these players went up against a similar team from the National League. The two teams would face off in ballparks across the country during the off-season. You have to remember, the first All-Star game wasn't organized until 1933. So before the All-Star game, if you lived in a National League city, you would never have a chance to see a big star from the American League. It was players who created the earliest idea of an All-Star team, and they took it on tour. Obviously, since it was the off-season, it was winter, they played primarily in cities in the southern part of the country. These games in the off-season gave the most talented players an opportunity to have additional income, not from a second job, but from playing the sport that they loved. Fans were eager to watch the games, finally having a chance to see big names like Honus Wagner, Cy Young, and Nape LaJoie. Players they might never see because these now legendary players were in a different league than their home team. And it's not like they could look at video or listen to radio broadcasts of the games. Opportunities were limited. 1903 was another standout year for Joss, 18 wins and a 2.19 ERA. But listeners, 1904 is when Addy Joss came into his own as a pitcher. Illness did limit his playing schedule, but he led the league with a 1.59 ERA and 14 wins in 24 starts. He would likely have posted more wins if he'd played more games or if he'd had a stronger team behind him. 1905 was Joss's first 20-win season, and he finished the year with a 2.01 ERA. The quality of his play in 1905 earned him a $500 bonus. That's worth about $12,000 in today's money. The 1906 season was just as impressive. Joss went 21-9 with a 1.72 ERA. These are incredible numbers for the dead ball era. And at the conclusion of the 1906 season, Joss, who now had 2 small kids at home, he took a job with a Toledo area paper, the Toledo Bee, and he wrote a sports column. The column was well received, and readers looked forward to Addy's take on the sport and his coverage of the World Series. Back then, many of the game's biggest players wrote, and that's in quotes, columns for newspapers with the use of ghostwriters. The player received a contract where they would be paid to write news coverage of an event, like the World Series or the playoffs. The player would give their perspective, but oftentimes they didn't actually write anything. Although I believe that Addy Joss, who completed high school and then went on to work at another school, I think he wrote a lot of his own stuff. Paying a successful ball player to write and assigning them a ghostwriter, that was common practice back then. The player would arrive at the event with a writer and a telegraph operator, and the stories would flow. One time, Babe Ruth was assigned to cover a World Series, and he came down with appendicitis. His ghostwriter penned, quote, "As I lie here, in Washington's emergency hospital, as a native New Yorker, my heart is with the Giants. But, as an American leaguer, it is my duty to root for the Senators." It's unlikely that Babe Ruth said any of these things. He was hospitalized and in poor health. In 1907, Cleveland presented Addy Joss with a contract worth $4,000 a year, which is about $100,000 a year in today's money. Joss accepted the offer and won his first 10 games that season. If that wasn't impressive enough, Joss tied the American League best with 27 wins. These wins included throwing a no-hitter against Detroit on September 5th. But Joss wasn't done with his record-breaking season. He threw another no-hitter on September 25th against the New York Highlanders, and on the very next day, his teammate, the one and only Heinie Berger, also threw a one-hitter. This was the first time in Major League history that teammates threw back-to-back one-hitters. And if you're wondering about the origins of Charles Berger's nickname, Heinie, according to his Wikipedia entry, Heinie was a popular nickname given to German ballplayers. Players like Heinie Breckendorf, Hall of Famer Heinie Manouche, Heinie Wagner, Heinie Smith, and many others. And it's worth noting that there has not been a Major League ballplayer nicknamed Heinie since the end of World War II. After his spectacular 1907 season, the Cleveland organization had high hopes for Addy Joss going into 1908, and Cleveland was not disappointed. Joss had an amazing season. His efforts on the mound made Cleveland a contender for the pennant. This included when Addy Joss threw a perfect game on October 2, 1908 against the White Sox. This outing was only the second perfect game in Major League history. Cleveland finished 1908 half a game behind Detroit. This is the closest that Joss came to the pennant during his abbreviated career. And when the dust cleared on the 1908 season, Joss had 24 wins and a staggering 1.16 ERA. He also walked only 30 batters in more than 300 innings pitched. At the end of the 1908 season, Joss could have used the time to rest and hang out with his young family, but he was back at work. He didn't tour with the American League Stars. He was designing an electric scoreboard that tracked balls and strikes for fans. He took this idea to the Cleveland management, and they installed it at the ballpark. 1909 was not a particularly interesting year. Joss was not in good health, and he spent most of the year on the bench. In 1910, his health was a bit better, and he showed flashes of his former brilliance, such as during a game on April 20th, just days after his 30th birthday, when Joss threw another no-hitter in a game against the Chicago White Sox. The outing was a defensive struggle, with Cleveland winning 1-0. Tragically, this is the last that fans and foes will see of Joss's talent. After playing in only 13 games, he suffered an injury to his right elbow, which sidelined him for weeks. 1911 did not start out well for Addy Joss. His elbow was still bothering him, but the team doctor was optimistic that rest would help it heal and bring him back to the game. On April 13th, Joss traveled with the team to Chattanooga, Tennessee. Before the game, he was on the field chatting with another player when he collapsed. Joss was transported back to Toledo so he could see his personal physician. The doctor diagnosed him with pleurisy, an inflammation of the lungs. Today, if you have pleurisy, a doctor might administer steroids to treat the condition. But in 1911, it wasn't an option. There was little that could be done to help the gravely ill athlete. Joss was taken home to his bed where he lingered for days. He turned 31 on April 12th and died in the small hours of April 14th, 1911. Tubercular meningitis, a disease that was untreatable in 1911, long before the availability of antibiotics and steroids. The untimely death of Addy Joss left his family, fans, and teammates devastated. His funeral was planned for April 17th, but Cleveland had a game scheduled that day. American League President Ban Johnson, well, he basically told Cleveland, too bad, game on. Team captain George Stovall, he lived up to his nickname, Firebrand, because he responded to Johnson's order by saying that the team was on strike. There would be no game that day. They intended to see off their friend and teammate. Fortunately, Johnson backed down and allowed the game to be rescheduled. And Johnson, well, he's an interesting character. He probably deserves his own episode, but let me give you a quick overview. Ban Johnson founded the American League, and his big accomplishment was pulling star players out of the National League to his league. He could do this because the National League had a salary cap in place, $2,400. He offered players more money to jump to the American League. Johnson also thought crowds were getting a bit too rowdy, and he started to enforce rules to make the game more family-friendly. He had an incredible amount of power, at least until he went up against Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who was the baseball commissioner, and Johnson lost. There is a lot more to be said about him, but we need an episode to properly cover his life. The funeral of Addie Joss was presided over by former ballplayer turned preacher Billy Sunday. Joss was buried at Woodlawn Cemetery in Toledo, Ohio. On July 24, 1911, a group of American League All-Stars played against the Cleveland team in a benefit game for Joss's wife Lillian and their two young children. You see, like Addie's father before him, Addie died young and left a wife and young children behind. This all-star team included Ty Cobb, Sam Crawford, Eddie Collins, and Tris Speaker. They faced off against Cleveland, who put Cy Young on the mound. The game raised nearly $13,000 for Lillian, Ruth, and Norman. That's about $300,000 in today's dollars. After that, the talent and brilliance of Addie Joss was mostly forgotten. It was in 1960 that Boston Globe sports writer Jerry Nason wrote an opinion piece about the Hall of Fame ballots, and he specifically mentioned his frustration that Addie Joss could not be added to the Hall of Fame. Joss hadn't played for 10 years. That was the requirement to be entered into the Hall of Fame, or even to be considered for the Hall of Fame. You had to have a career of at least 10 years in the major leagues. Joss died before he achieved that. His name came up again in 1973, just months after the tragic death of Roberto Clemente. Clemente was hastily added to the Hall of Fame after his death in a plane crash. And yes, we will be covering Clemente in a future episode. It wouldn't be until 1978 that the 10-year rule was set aside so Addie Joss could take his rightful place in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Sadly, his children did not live long enough to see their father enshrined. His daughter, Ruth, she died in 1957, and his son Norman, he passed away in 1977. The Dead Ball Podcast is created by Tim Scott. This week's episode was written by me, Nina Instead. Chuck Walters is our technical consultant and audio editor. To learn more about the show or talk with like-minded baseball fans, join the Dead Ball discussion group on Facebook.